Parshas Matos is a parsha that is primarily dealing with the halachas of Hilchos Nadorim, Hilchos Tumah and Tahara, of Kasher and Kelim. But there's one particular parsha I want to focus on this year, and I believe that this is a key. This is a key to success in anything one does in Ruchnius. This is the key. It is very, very easy, and it's very, very straightforward to be a fanatic in anything one does. A fanatic in Hasmada. You can be a fanatic in Bittul. Yeah, a person can be, it's very easy to be on one side or the other. That's not hard. To be a fanatic is not difficult. Okay, last week I discussed how to be a fanatic in the correct way, but it's not hard. Balance, to be balanced, to know exactly when I should be doing one side, and on the other hand, to exactly the opposite, that is the godless. That takes intellect, that takes calculation, that takes maturity, and that takes shimush. You've got to see to Tamil Chachamim dealing with that. And then for this parasha, I want to focus on one parasha, Parashas Matos. In the Melchama Mechemes Midyon, and there's five particular lessons I want to draw out of this particular parasha that shows us the importance of not only just doing things the correct way, but knowing sometimes when to back off and focus on the balance of what's being said over here. So the parasha begins like this. The parasha in Parasha Namadalef, Vayadav Hashem Moshe Lemur. Nakoy nikmas b'nei Yisrael m'esem Midyanim, take nekoma from Klal Yisrael from Midyanim. Achet to osiv anamecho. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, take nekoma from Klal Yisrael from the Midyanim. After that, you will be collected from your nation. In other words, this is your last moment of glory. This is it. This is it. After this, you go. Wow. Okay? Fine. Says the next pasuk, Vedaber Moshe al ha'om le'emor. Moshe Rabbeinu said to the nation, Hechotz mitchem anoshim etzavah. Collect from yourselves anoshim. Anoshim always means the Melech HaChomim. Letzavah for the nation. But you are Midyan. Lo seith nikmas Hashem the Midyan. So here he changed it around. Hashem said, take nikmas Yisro, B'nai Yisrael. Didn't the comma of B'nai Yisrael, the fact that the Midianites managed to wipe out 24,000 Yidden with their plan of making them do Znus and Avodah Zarah, take revenge for Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu changes and he says, I want to take the nakama of Nikmas Hashem Pemidyan, the nakama of Hashem Pemidyan. Why did he change it around? And the parasha goes through exactly what happened over here, and ultimately it was an extremely successful war. Very, very successful war. Now, I want to just focus on this point over here. The Pasuk says as well, Achet Os Balamecho, says the Medrash, Moshe Rabbeinu had a choice. Achet Os Balamecho means you'll not die before this war takes place. Your death is totally dependent on this war. Remember, there's a Reb Shapsi Frenkel from the Frenkel Rambam. Unbelievable work he did. Now, the Frenkel Rambam is unbelievable work. He once got a bracha from the Chazon Ish that he'll finish the Rambam. So the first few volumes he did very quickly. The later volumes, some of them, Denny Harry. No, he got a bracha from the Chazon Ish. You know, he's 90, 95, bought another volume. What's the hurry? I might have sniffed the reason he hasn't finished. But in other words, if your death is dependent on an event happening, fantastic. Hold off, and you live longer. Moshe Rabbeinu, what did he do? Klal Yisrael knew that as well. Klal Yisrael knew that Moshe Rabbeinu will not die until this war has been fought. And therefore, ultimately, they wanted to hang on to the Rebbe. The prophet says later on that they actually forced Klal Yisrael to go out and fight. The question is, why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu connect Moshe Rabbeinu's death to Midyan? Why can't the Kodesh Baruch Hu say, go out and fight? We talk about your death later. Why did he connect the death to the fight against Midyan? What's the idea behind that? So the Mefarshim explain that this. The Mefarshim I've seen is Rav Kasman explains that this. So ultimately, this was a test of Moshe Rabbeinu's Mesiras Nefesh. Moshe Rabbeinu could have easily held off his death. Moshe Rabbeinu said, ultimately, it's my choice when I make this war. I can make this war in 30 years' time. I can live another 30 years. Moshe Rabbeinu said, no. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling me, take revenge for Klal Yisrael, for their nekama. Now, how can I present this to Klal Yisrael? I can say to them, Rabbeinu, I want to tell you something. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, fight Midyan, because it's your Nakama. You know what? Let's be moichel our Nakama. Let's all say, you know what? We don't mind. We moichel. We forgive the Nakama against Midyan. Would they have to fight the war? They wouldn't have to. What did Moshe Rabbeinu see through this? He said, no. There's something deeper. This is not only Nakama Bnei Yisrael, this is Nikmas Hashem. This is a Chil Hashem took place in this war. And if we forget about Klal Yisrael, forget about the Nakama that they deserve against Midyan, there's a Chil Hashem element here that I've got to fight for. And if a Moshe Rabbeinu was Moshe Nefesh, literally gave up his life, he could live a lot longer, he was Moshe Nefesh, to tell Klal Yisrael, forget about your Nakama, worry about Hashem's Nakama, and that's how he managed to mobilize them. Because if he would have told them that the Prophet said before, Nikmas Bnei Yisrael, he said, you know what? We're Moichel, we don't want to go to war, we want you to live longer. Therefore, Dov could change around to Nikmas Hashem, he can't be Moichel Hashem's Nakama, and if he changed the Prophet around, in order because he saw through it, there's an element there of Kiddush Hashem, and at Kiddush Hashem, I cannot be Moichel. And therefore, that's why he mobilized them. And therefore, literally, he was Moshe Nefesh, gave up his life for the fact that he told Klal Yisrael to fight now, and while he could have delayed it a lot later and fought a lot later. That was Nakama of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which was bought with Mesiras Nefesh and with Zerivas. Fabulous. Okay? Unbelievable Mesiras Nefesh. On the other hand, who went out to fight? The Pasuk says, Yishlach Oysam Moshe, Elef Lamata Tzavo, Pasuk Vav, there's Pinchas Ben Elozo, Ben Elozo HaKoyim. He sent out Pinchas, he did not go out and fight himself. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu not go out and fight himself? Said the Medrash. No, I didn't go out and fight himself. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know what? I used Midyan in a time of need. When I needed to be saved from the shrine, I went to Midyan. And they looked after me there. I cannot possibly go out now and fight against Midyan if I was saved by Midyan. So therefore I've got to send out Pinchas to fight and not me. So on one hand, you have unbelievable Mesiras Nefesh, you have Zerizus, you have an objectivity to see that this is Nikmas Hashem and not Nikmas Bnei Yisrael in order, therefore we should fight. On the other hand, there's an element here of Mesiras Nefesh that doesn't allow me to do it in the Nikmas Hashem. For one second, Hashem says, Moshe Rabbeinu, you do it. You do it. How can he change it? How can he send Pinchas, number one? And number two, oh, what does it help me to send Pinchas? Will they die any less if I send Pinchas? They won't. For a difference if I do it, Pinchas does it. This is war. They're going to go out and kill them anyway. For a difference to make if I go out and kill them, or Pinchas goes out and kill them. The terrorist is, the halacha is at this. The Akor Satoiv is doicha everything else. Akor Satoiv tells me, when Hashem says Moshe Rabbeinu go out and fight, it means Pinchas go out and fight. It cannot mean me, says Moshe Rabbeinu. It cannot possibly be that I'll say by Midian that I should go out and fight. Aye, it's an unbelievable opportunity for Kiddush Hashem and your Moshe Nefesh and your Zoris. Very nice. All these are very, very lovely things. But it cannot interfere with my Hakoros HaToiv. If it's Hakoros HaToiv, if we've got even the smallest amount of Hakoros HaToiv against our enemies, people who were out there to wipe us out, 24,000 people, and it's an enemy of ours. Fine, they're enemies, but I have a course of toys. It cannot be me. I cannot be the big hero here. I cannot make Kavod Shemayim over here. I must give it over to somebody else to the Kavod Shemayim, even if it's the last thing I'm ever going to do. I cannot get involved. So on one hand, you have the balance. You have Zerizus. You have Mesiras Nefesh. You have objectivity. On the other hand, you have, when you have comes in conflict with a course of toys, you cannot possibly go against that. I want to give you an example of this particular element. I doubt in the last generation there was a single person that represented Mesiras Nefesh for Torah like Rabshach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. His devekus to Torah, his asmoda, his Mesiras Nefesh. No, his wife complained to a neighbor that Rabshach never gets to bed. So she said, okay, do something, the lights turn off. He can't learn anymore, he'll get to bed and he'll make himself ill. So, okay, he did that. So somehow they managed to turn the lights off, the whole house is dark. So they found Rashach standing up on a chair next to the pilot light of the, had like a Junkers, like a some heating unit. He's looking at a little blue light, looking at a safer, trying to learn the safer because of that light. You know, that was Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh for Torah was incredible. Incredible. On the other hand, there's an unbelievable, beautiful story I saw from a Pesach Kron. Reb Ginsburg, one of his Talmidim, went to visit him in 1979, And his grandson said, I'm sorry, he can't go into the Zaydi. He can't go into the Zaydi. Why not? He's out of things. He's weakened. He's tired. He doesn't feel so good. Yesterday's a very, very busy day. What happened yesterday? He said, yesterday I took my grandfather to a Levaya in Haifa. Called me in the morning, told me, call me my driver. Calls him his driver, and his driver takes him and drives him all the way to Haifa. It's the middle of the winter. And the wind is howling and the rain is pouring down. And he calls him, and he drives all the way there. The chef obviously learning at the back. And he comes to this Levaya, says, what is the Levaya for? Maybe on the Gedolei Ador. Maybe it's for a big nazar, a person gave a lot of money to the yeshiva. What is this for? Eventually, he finds this little dark base of Kavoris. In the corner there, there's a few people huddling together there, you know, with a few umbrellas, burying this woman, this anonymous Russian woman. And Shach gets out of the car, and he says, anyone can say Kaddish? Nobody has to say Kaddish. He just stood by the cave and said Kaddish. And he buried this woman, and the rain is coming down, and it's pouring, and it's literally, there's water gushing down on Shach's hat, and he's drenched, absolutely drenched. Okay. Fine, he buries this woman, Kavaldi, he gets back in the car, grandson is scared to ask him anything. He gets back in the car, after a few minutes he says, stop. So what's the matter? Oh, we're on top of a hill now, this is the coolest part of this area, I'm going to get out of the car a second. So, okay, there you are, fine, take your umbrella, no, without the umbrella. He's umbrella in the car and he's standing there and it's freezing cold, the wind is howling, the rain is going down his neck. It's freezing cold, the shark stands out there for 2 minutes. He comes back in shivering, drenched. He gets back in the car. Oh, now we can go back home. So his grandson says, hey, what's all this about? So I'll tell you, years and years ago, when I first started in yeshiva, it was very hard. It was yeshiva for select bochurim. I was the youngest boy there, I was 12 years old. And the yeshiva for select bochurim. And the good bochurim got treated very, very well. Not such good, but you have to fight for your rights there. They have beds. Luxury, they have beds. Right? And therefore the good bochurim got a place on the bench next to the fire, and the younger bochurim had to sort themselves out. He said, I was so hungry, I was so cold, I was lying on the floor, the benches were all taken by the older bochurim, I was lying on the floor, I was shivering, I was sleep deprived, I was starving, and day after day, week after week, I was like that, sadly, you know what, forget it, it's not for me. My uncle sent me a letter, and he said, come to join my business. Nebuch, you know, you haven't said, join my business, I'll look after you. And I thought, maybe Taka. But the letter came to me on Friday, and I decided to wait till Moshe Shabbos. After I thought, I'll go and join my uncle. I'll go become a businessman. That Friday afternoon, they got a delivery. What's a delivery of? Delivery of quilts. Quilts from a local distributor, quilts. And the local distributor decided to give to yeshiva quilts. And had extra, he gave quilts, and the boy took the quilts. Each boy was given a quilt. Shach was given a quilt, took this quilt, and he laid down in the quilt, and he said for the first time, for weeks and weeks, he'd be able to sleep properly. Next morning, he was fresh, he was able to learn. And from that time on, things went better and better. And he said, I'm stayed in yeshiva, and Baruch Hashem, I'm a Sheikh of Talmud Chochem as well. Baruch Hashem. He said, if not for this woman, where would I be? I'd be in my uncle's business, I would have become a business person. Who knows where I would have been today? This woman was a wife of the man who sent the quilts to the yeshiva. And Shach had kept tabs with her all this time. And he said, therefore I came to the Levaya to give kavod to the person who changed my life. The person who gave me koyach to become the Gadol Hador. Didn't say that. The person who gave me koyach to learn. And he said, but when on the way back home, I didn't remember how cold I was. I didn't remember what coast I had. I remember it was a little bit cold. I had to get out of the car and I went to the coldest place. And for 2 minutes I felt the cold I felt lying on the floor when I was in yeshiva. And then I had the real Akaras HaTov. Then I knew what I was really feeling, how much I owe this woman. But Boisai, that whole day he gave up. He could have been learning that day. Yeah? The next day, he wasn't feeling that good. That's Mesiras Nefesh. That is Mesiras Nefesh and Zrizus for Torah on one side, Akaras HaTov on the other. Akaras HaTov he had for this woman made him do what he did. Because ultimately, Chas V'Chalila, can a person use Mesiras Nefesh and use the reasons when it interferes with the Akaras HaTov? We have good family relationships. We have relationships with rebbes, relationships with friends, and they can do one small thing, and that's it. You're broken off from them. I want nothing to do with them ever again. What second? Where's your Akaras HaTov? that was the first lesson of balance. Moshe Rabbeinu had Mesiras Nefesh, he had Zerizas, that when it comes to Karas HaTov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not mean me, Pinchas is the one who's going to be Mekadosh Shem Shemayim. That's lesson number one. The Meshech Chochma says, why was it that Hashem Moshe Rabbeinu had to have the war during his lifetime? If the whole element over here was Mesiras Nefesh, you know what? And because of Karas HaTov, he could not fight Midian. Well, let's wait till after Moshe Rabbeinu dies, and then fight Midian. Anyway, Moshe Rabbeinu's not going to go out to war. It's Pinchas. So let Moshe Rabbeinu die, and let Pinchas go out. Says the Meshech Chochma, that if that would have happened, what would we have said? That the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu did not go out and fight Midian during his lifetime is because he was machnif them. There's chanifus, there's flattery. You know, even though Moshe Rabbeinu saw how terrible Midian was, but because he had some kind of connection, emotional attachment to them, he could not go out and fight them. Says the Kodesh Baruch Hu, I want you, Moshe Rabbeinu, before you die, to show the whole world that there's a big difference between Hakaras HaTov and flattery. Hakaras HaTov, yes. Flattery, no. I can't go out and fight you myself, no. But you should just know, what you did, Midian, you may have saved my life, you may have been very good to me, but what you did was terrible and you deserve to be wiped out. You deserve to be fought with in a war, in a battle. And therefore, says the Meshech Chochma, there's a major difference between thanking the person, appreciating what they did, and completely subjugating the person because the person did you a favor. The Satmar of Zecher Tzadik HaKadosh Livrach of Yehli, through some unbelievable twist of fate, of Yehlish, the Satmar Rebbe got saved by the Zionists. Yeah? A famous thing, the Zionists bought one load of Jews on the way to the thing, to the concentration camp. He was on that train. He was saved by the Zionists. The Yehlish, the Satmar, was saved by the Zionists. Right? Unbelievable. So you'd imagine, if that's the case, you know, it's a close of he saved my life. Now, where would America be today without Satmar? You know, an army Satmar is today, Blian Hora? Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe, of from the Elohim. Rabbi Yehuda built them up from his own sweat and blood and tears. He built them up. And they're saved by the Zionists. So one would imagine, of course, Toys, yeah, don't speak against them. There's no person who fought the Zionists. And that idea is an ideology as much as a Yehudish. You know Satmar and Zionists. They're not the best of friends. There's a major difference between our Karas HaTov, yes. I appreciate what they did to save my life. But Hanifus, to completely bow down to them and completely subjugate everything I have because that's what they did to me? No. And therefore, I can't fight you, Midian, but don't believe for 1 second, Midian, you're going to get away with what you did. You wiped out 24,000 people of Klal Yisrael. You caused Avodah Zarah. You caused murder. You tried to be wiped out. You're going to be wiped out. Not by me, but by somebody else. There's a second lesson. There's a very, very fine bunch in the Karas HaTov and Chanifus. You get people, you get donors to yeshiva, who sometimes say things, oh, apokorsis. Say apokorsis. You know, I don't really think that it's very important that people sit in Kodan and learn. Well, you may say so, but there happens to be that a person who says such a thing, that there's no reason why people sit down and learn Torah, is actually not appreciating how the world survives. And in fact, the Gemara says, a person who touches wine, his wine is like a goy touched it. And if ultimately there's a certain element there of apokorsis, because every word of Torah that is learnt brings kedusha to the world and brings substance to the world and a sustenance to the world. And if you say such a thing, there's an element of apokorsis. So just nod your head and say, yes, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, No, you have to sometimes say, I appreciate every little bit of support you give to the yeshiva, but I must tell you, I don't agree with what's being said here. I cannot agree with you on this point. Hope you don't take it badly, but I cannot agree with you. There's a difference between Hakaras HaTov and Chanifus. That's the second lesson. The third lesson is the Pasuk says, the third lesson is Elif Lamato, the Pasuk says this, the Pasuk Dalet. Elif Lamato, Elif Lamato, Lechon Matis Yishol Tishlecho Yisom. So Medeshava brings down Gimel Alofim Lekol Shevet V'Shevet. There are 3,000 people from each Shevet. 2,000 went out to war, and 1,000 stayed behind. The Medrash Rabbah. Actually went out with their swords and spears. 1,000 went out to Davin, to the place where they were fighting, to Davin, and 1,000 stayed behind to deal to Mishamnes HaKelim. They work from behind. Okay? Ask of Chaska like this. Why did that thousand who were davening have to go out to war? Why couldn't those people who are davening for the success of the nation not go out to daven? Let them daven in a nice comfortable shul somewhere, no air conditioning. Why should they go out to the place of fighting and put their lives in danger? What for? You can't daven as well. You're ducking the bullets. You can't daven a nice fella. Hard enough daven in the kosher, saying to hit him with the boys. Just sit down in the quiet shul and daven. You concentrate much better. Why do they have to go out to battle? Why do they go out to the same place where they're fighting in order that they should be tefillah over there? Number one. Number two, why did the Bechlal need somebody? Why did the Bechlal need 1,000 people from each tribe to daven for them? What war was this? On the Chemes Mitzvah. Hashem said, you are doing this for a mitzvah. I'm telling you, you're fulfilling my command to go out to do war. Ultimately, we know that a shluchim mitzvah in a nezakin, a person who does a mitzvah does not get damaged. Therefore, ultimately, they're doing Shem Shemayim. They're doing a mitzvah. Therefore, why the chal do you need people davening for you? You're guaranteed success. Thirdly, the parasha goes out and talks all about how they split up the different amounts that was taken in by Klal Yisrael. They got how many donkeys, got split up here, got split up there. 20 pesukim talk about that. Is that so important? Need 20 pesukim to discuss this got that, and they got this, and this got that. Who cares? Big deal. Just say split them out, they split up the shalom. Exactly, this got that, and that got this. Who cares? The point is like this. There is a very, very great danger of a person blurring the balance between koichi v'oitzim yodi, or what we consider hishtadlus, and results. A person sometimes imagines that the hishtadlus that he does equals the results that happen. However much work I put into something, that is directly connected to the result that happens. The sheker of that is so strong that even the greatest people can fall into that. Who went out to war here? Kulam anoshim, the ultimate chachamim. These are the greatest amid chachamim. These are the greatest people fighting a holy war with Pinchas and another leading it. This is unbelievable. They're seeing this in right, left, and center. You know what? You know who's winning this war? It's us. It's our koyach. It's our strength. It's our intellect. It's all me. And therefore, they chas v'sholem, even if the shluchim mitzvah can lose a battle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says we need 1,000 people, many tribes standing there, shuckling away the talisman filling in the corner to remind them that they are not waging the war. It's these people over here with their ruchnius that is actually helping you fight. Unless they saw their own eyes, unless they can actually see these people davening, it would be worth absolutely nothing and it would be wiped out. Because Koichi V'Oitzim Yodi is so strong. Koichi V'Oitzim Yodi is so powerful that even the biggest Melech HaChomim can believe that even in the Chemes Mitzvah, it's them doing the war, and ultimately it's their strength that's bringing them success. So you have to have a visual of all these people davening right next to you. Every second while they were fighting, it's all these people davening, can hear them davening to remind you that it's the tefillah that's helping you, and not chas v'sholem your own action that's doing it. And that is why you have to be in a battleground, and that is why even in the Chemes Mitzvah, you can lose in the Chemes Mitzvah with Koichi V'Oitzim Yodi. And that is why later on the parasha talks about in such detail exactly how much each one got to show us that the people who actually fought in the war got as much as the same people who are actually out fighting, doubling in the battlefield, because they're just as important one as the other, if not more. The Moediger story I saw in Leinu Shabeach from Zilberstein. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, Zechus Al Levracha, was very, very sick. And he was in hospital, and his two sons-in-law, Reb Nochum Petzovitz, and Yitzchak Ezrachi, they both went to visit Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, and he can hardly talk. So they said to Reb Chaim, "Should we phone up the Mashkiach to ask him to daven for you?" Who's the Mashkiach? The Mashkiach was of Eli Lapian. Said, "Yeah, phone him up." Yeah, he nodded his head. Phone him up. So they phoned him up, and of Eli Lapian. Eli Lapian then was a Mashkiach of Kfar Chassidim, and he went to the base medrash and Kfar Chassidim, opened up the Aron HaKodesh, and he cried bitter tears. Rebbeinu Shleilam, he says, "One of Gedolei Hador in bed, give him a refuah shleima." Then a couple of hours later, Chaim sits up from bed and says, "I want to go home. I want to get dressed." I'll say, "Well enough." No, I'm well enough. I want to go home. So, okay, but first I need to get the doctor to check you. Fine, get the doctor to check me. Dovta goes to Rechaim from Levitz, it's absolutely fine. Yeah, you're fine, you can go home. Get dressed, you can go home. Got dressed and you went home. Right? Unbelievableness. Yeah, unbelievableness. A few years later, it was 1970 of Eliyahu's Nifter. 1970 of Eliyahu's Nifter. Eliyahu Lapin was Nifter, 1970. And at the Levi, they wanted Rechaim Shmulevitz to give a hesped. So Rechaim Shmulevitz didn't want to give a hesped. Didn't feel he was great enough to give a hesped on Rebbe Eliyahu Lapin. But there was something going on in the background that was stirring up the whole world. What happened was, in 1970, there were four planes that were hijacked by the Palestinians on the way away from Tel Aviv to New York. And one of the planes was a TWA plane that was flying from Tel Aviv to Frankfurt and Frankfurt to New York, and it was hijacked in Frankfurt. On that plane was Yitzhak Kuttner, his wife, his only daughter, Rebbetzin David, and Rebbe Yonason David. Yeah? So, on that flight, those four people were kidnapped. The Palestinians were so clear who was Jewish or who weren't Jewish, they released 310, and they flew the planes to Jordan. They released 310 hostages that went to Amman, and the 56 Jews they separated and they kept them still. And the world was going crazy trying to release these hostages. Yitzhak Kuttner, God love all, stuck in his plane. Unbelievable. The guys are crazy. They blew up the planes already, and it was getting very, 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 very touch and go whether these people are going to survive. Rechaim Shmulevitz stood up by the hesped, and he says, Rebellia, Yinam Shemayim, in your schus, go to the Kisei HaKavod, and beg from the Kisei HaKavod that they should release of Yitzchok. I can vouch for him that he's a godel. Yeah? He's a Erechayid. Go and daven for him. You know, or your sechus, ever the Lashon was, in your sechus, please help him. At that moment, the Jordanians came, and King Hussein put a whole commando thing, and they shot the terrorists, and then redeemed them at that moment. Mamish, a few minutes later. And all the way through the Shiva, again and again, Chaim was saying, ah, the Mashkeach hasn't geholfen. The Mashkeach helped us. Now, deep behind the Israel Reisai, we sometimes don't see Tefillah versus Koyka Voitzim Yodi. Ah, look at the Jordanians, commando attack. It's only because these people were in touch, the Gedolim were in touch with the Koyach of Tefillah, the Koyach of Ruchnius, the Koyach of connection with the Bein Shalom, did not lose touch with Koyka Voitzim Yodi. That was the reason why they had to be mamash on the battleground. The Pasuk says, Oindim hoi ragleinu b'sharoich Yerushalayim. The Medrash says, Mi gom lecho, sh'einu hoi ragleinu b'mochama, who gave us koyach to fight in the war? B'sharoich Yerushalayim sh'oifkim mehem atayra. In the gates of Yerushalayim, they go out to war. Okay, I can't go into this too much, but, okay. So over here again, there's another lesson of balance. Hishtadlus versus appreciation that could spoke around the world in the end. And if again, it's another lesson of balance over here. Now, basically, I just want to. Unfortunately, time is running out. I've got a lot to say here, but I don't think I'm going to say everything. The Apostle says like this, and Apostle Lamed Allah, Apostle Zayin, an unbelievable Nusra. They yitzpu al midyan, and they went out. The yitzpu al midyan, who came out to wipe them out. Kashet tivo Hashem es Moshe v'yahalgu kol zocho, and he went out like a Kodesh Baruch Hu commanded. V'yahalgu kol zocho, and he killed every zocho. What's pshat kashet tivo Hashem es Moshe? What's pshat in this pasuk kashet tivo Hashem es Moshe? Like Shem commanded what to go out and fight? Says the Ramban. There's a machlekes over here. Ramban, how to count the Tarek mitzvahs. One of the mitzvahs that the Ramban believes, the Ramban missed out, for this particular mitzvah over here. Kashet Tzivah Hashem Es Moshe is a mitzvah, Asei Deraisa, that was taught over here by Mechemes Midyan. What's that mitzvah? The mitzvah is, when you go out to war, you've got to leave the enemy an escape route. You've got to leave the enemy a fourth, if you're going out from three ways, you've got to leave the enemy a fourth way that he can run away. You're not allowed to take them and corner them on all four sides. Kashet Tzivah Hashem Es Moshe is a command that Kodesh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu to not completely surround them. Leave them an escape route that they can go and they can leave and nothing will happen to them. Not by Shilas Ammin. it's not valid lachem by shemus amin. Shemus amin can also escape, but they can leave before. They can't make mochama. Or malik is different. But a normal mochama, the halacha is leave an escape route. Says the Rambam, this is one of mitzvahs asay of the tarig mitzvahs. The Rambam, famous meshul chochma, doesn't count it, not because he doesn't believe it's a mitzvah, but he just believes that's common sense. Now, if you corner a cat, what's he going to do? He'll jump at you, right? If he knows no other way, you know, he might as well try his best. There's nothing to lose. Therefore, if you take an army and completely surround an enemy on all four sides, he has nothing to lose. Therefore, it's just actual common sense. Always leave them escape route. That way, they'll run away rather than give it their all and fight against you. But the Ramban holds it's a mitzvah of Seder Eisa. Leave an enemy an escape route. The Torah of Rom, Ron Krasinski, says an unbelievable thing. He said Yaakov Avinu had a fight with Lavan Arami, and Yaakov Avinu was met by Lavan Arami, and Lavan Arami said, "Why didn't you tell me that you're going?" Yaakov Avinu said to him, "What are you talking about? I know you. I served you by day and by night." He said to him, "You know, I looked after your animals when the kor and the choyim and the winter and everything." Yeah, and he's telling me that I fooled you. Who's the one who fooled whom over here? What did Lavan answer him? Vayan Lavan v'omar. Vayan Lavan v'yemel Yaakov. Habonim b'noisai. My daughters are my daughters, and my sons are my sons. What a pathetic answer. Yeah. Okay. Are we arguing about who's the sons and who's the daughters over here? We're arguing about you swindling me blind, right? That's what we're arguing about. Stick to the point. The fact Lavan gave such a pathetic answer was because Yaakov gave such a strong argument, they made him look so foolish. Said the Torah of Ram, Yaakov was wrong to do that. He should have allowed him to save face in a way that even in an argument a person can walk away destroyed, but at least with a way that he does not look as if he's a complete idiot. In other words, Rabbi Yisai, war is war. An argument with somebody is an argument. If he deserves to be argued, it's fine. But every din is rachamim. You've got to make sure that you give the person a little bit of space to look a little bit good with what he did. Don't, you know, somebody asks a question in shir. So the good nagid is shir, in a question, a pathetic question, you always say, gvaldik, you know, you mean to ask like this. You know what asks this? Yeah, this is Rekiva Eger. No, I didn't mean to ask that. I meant to ask that. You know, look like a complete idiot. But what do you do? Letting the person save face. Abisai, you see over here the fourth lesson. That even in war, even when you're actually fighting somebody, and you're right to fight him, there's got to be rachamim and din. And therefore, the Mechemes Midyon is all about this unbelievable sophistication of Mesiris Nefesh and Zerizus versus Akos HaTov, the balance between the two. It's a balance between Chanifus and a balance between Chanifus and Akos HaTov. It's a balance between Hishtadlus and realizing Kosh Baruch Hu is in control. It's a balance between what we're saying now of Din and Rachamim. And I just want to finish off with one last thought. In a war, when you're doing the right thing, sometimes you believe that a holy war, there's no boundaries. The Pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu sent. The Pasuk says, V'yishach oisam Moshe elef l'matelet l'tzvoi oisam v'espinchos. Pasuk Vav. He sent them Moshe, sent them 1,000 for each tribe, v'espinchos ben Elazar. The question is, why did he not send the Anoshim of that tribe? Why did he give the leadership of each tribe under Pinchos? In other words, he sent the tribes out, 3,000 each tribe, who were under the leadership of Pinchos. Why were they under the leadership of themselves? Why didn't their Nasi come and lead each tribe according to the tribe? The Nasi were the biggest Smid HaChomim. Why leave the big, you know, the big ones behind, the big Smid HaChomim who are going to be actually used for the biggest Chush, and leave them behind? They stay at home, and Pinchos runs over. Where's the leadership here? A war needs leadership. A war needs strength. A war needs Smid HaChomim. Why leave the Nasi behind? What's going on here? Says the Balei Torah, you know why? Because there's one tribe over here that doesn't have a Nasi. You know who that tribe is? Shimon. Because just last week, Shimon got wiped out. And therefore, if we have 11 tribes going out with their Nasi walking in front of them and not Shimon, what's Shimon going to feel like? Shimon's going to feel like a schmatter. He doesn't have a nosi. So get a new nosi. Doesn't help you. There's something going to be missing there. And therefore, even if it means Mesiris Nefesh, even if you're lacking leadership now, even if it means Mesiris Nefesh, no, we don't know how well the war will go, but if it's actually going to affect another human being, one iota, one element of shame, we're not going to do it. What element of shame? One second. Why are you going to have to fight Midian? You know why? Because your Nossi had messed up, yeah, with Cosby, remember? That's why you're going to have to fight them. No! Fine, okay, we have to do what we have to do. But one extra element of shame, that you don't have an offspring, we have, it's not worth having leadership. It's worthwhile being Moisa Nefesh. It's worthwhile going out there and not knowing what's going to happen, and not our own leader, being out of Pinchas, just not Chas V'Shalom to embarrass you. This is the Koyach. You can have a holy war, a war like Kosh Baruch Hu says, go out and fight. It's all about Kiddush Hashem. It's all about Malchus Shemayim. It's all about taking revenge for Kodesh Baruch Hu. Fine, lovely. But when one Yid suffers, we don't compromise on that. When one Yid suffers, we'll go along and do everything we can through the Halacha to make sure that Chas V'Shalom, we Moish Nefesh ourselves, that no other person should suffer with what our mitzvahs. We have to know when we are Machmir, we have to know when we are doing mitzvahs, and we're doing minhagim, and we're doing chumras, we can do all these wonderful things HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to. But when another Jew suffers, you have to take very, very carefully whether such a thing is a correct thing to do. And that comes with this tremendous, tremendous feeling. I forgot exactly the name, so there's a tremendous Talmud Chacham who had Parkinson's, and he had to have a bocha looking after him. Bocha looked after him. And the bocha would take a tzedakah kli, and he'd wash his hands for him, he'd dry his hands for him, help him put him on his tefillin. Anyway, one time, he's washing his hands for tzedakah, and the Talmud Chacham jerked suddenly, and he knocked the whole kli of tzedakah and went all over his bed, all over his pajamas. And the bocha was shattered. The bocha was so upset, you know, so he filled up the kli again and washed his hands again. You know, his hands were shaking, washed his hands again. And the Rashi was like, oh, where are you? How long have you been in yeshiva for? Ah, geschmack. Had a whole conversation with him. Later on, he told his friends what happened to him, you know, and he washed his hands and went all over. And then Rashiva asked him, what, did Rashiva ask you what? Rashiva's makbid not to talk before he doesn't. He's never talked since the bar mitzvah before he doesn't. He asked you, where are you learning? It can't be, not shaykh. So I'm telling you, I was there. He asked me where I'm learning, you know, what mesecht I'm learning. He can't be. Rashiva's never spoken before he's davened. He did here. You know why? Because a chumrah on somebody else's expense, this boy needed to feel that Rosh Hashiva likes him. Don't worry about it. To calm this boy down, to make him feel good. And if I've got a chumrah, it doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch, I've got a chumrah not on his boy's expense. If I want to fight a war of Nechemes Mitzvah, not on the expense of a poor Shevet Shimon who's going to lose out by it. It's all about balance. It's all about doing something knowing the opposite side. I saw the Moedig Maisa finish up with this Maisa. There's a Talmud Chacham, a big, big Talmud Chacham, who had a few Talmidim learning Safras, teaching his Talmidim Safras. In the middle of writing, a shame, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, this man's wife walked in. He put down his pen. I'm not saying this is Halacha L'maisa. It's very clear. I don't know whether it's Halacha L'maisa or not. He put down his pen, and he said, oh, Shalom, come inside. How was the shopping? I had a whole discussion with her. So the boy pulled out Shulchan Aruch and says, Rebbe, it says clearly not like being mafsik when you're writing a shame. What's going on here? He says, one second. I'm going to show you a different sefer. He shows him a chumash. And in the chumash it says, by a seter, you rub out Shem Hashem for the sake of Shalom Bayis. You take a Kosh Baruch's name, you have a seter, not sure whether she misbehaved, you rub out the Shem Hashem for the sake of Shalom Bayis. He said, if I can already rub out the Shem Hashem for Shalom Bayis, I can mask the Shem Hashem for the sake of Shalom Bayis. Wow! That's a chumrah. It's a din of Shulchan Aruch, which is a chumrah in Shem Hashem. One has to know that the godless of a person takes place in not in the extremes. It takes place in the balance he has in everything he does. When to be machmir, when to be mekel, when to be have used din, when to use rachamim, when to use a kosa toiv, when to use zrizas, when to use chanifas, chas v'shalom, you know, where kosa toiv overrides chanifas. It's all about balance. It's all about balance. The Parshas Matzos is all about balance. The last thing Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to show Klal Yisrael was, Rabbeisai, I've taught you all this time. I've been with you all this time. I want to see you I want to show you one final lesson. This is the most important lesson. I'm leaving you with this, Mechemes Midyon. I'm leaving you with something that's going to remain with you the rest of your life. And that is, balance is the most important thing. Fanaticism and extremism, and when it comes to an expense of something else, has to be very, 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 very carefully thought out. It usually doesn't exist. It's all about balance. Yeah? It's actually about Pashas Matis, about being on a matof, right? It's all about balance. It's all about knowing exactly where you're coming from, how much and how little. And that is the koyach of being around Tamid Chachomim, being in a neighborhood where people are actually being oisik and Torah and mitzvahs. When do I give stocker? When do I not give stocker? Sometimes it's mitzvah not to give stocker. Yeah? Sometimes it's better not to. Sometimes it's better as a chiv to. All these different questions, it takes tremendous judgment. It takes tremendous pikchus. And all of it is based on how great a person is, not by when he's on the extreme polar, but when he's exactly in the middle, when he knows exactly when to use what. That is the gadlus. That is the middus of a person is judged by that, and his greatness, a way he's holding in ruchnius and in gashmius, is based on exactly on this particular point. What and when am I supposed to use this particular middah, and when am I better not to use this middah? That is Moshe Rabbeinu's legacy, and that's how he left Klal Yisrael, and that's the most important lesson, I believe. The last thing Moshe wanted to do was give over this lesson. You know, and it's all about Midyan. Moshe Rabbeinu started off in Midyan and ended up in Midyan. It's all one large circle. You know, what goes around comes around. It's all about Koros HaTov. It's all about appreciating people what they did for you in the past. You know, not necessarily being a machnif to them, but that is a Jew, and that is a person who is focused on growth, is balance, and that's what it's all about.